Welcome to the Emotional Horsemanship Podcast. I am your host, Lockie Phillips, and I help deeply caring equestrians create emotionally balanced horses with science, empathy, and feel. This podcast is a safe place for anyone who desires a better future for horses and for the equestrian lifestyle. I hope that you will enjoy these solo and collaborative episodes where we enjoy a deep insight into our horses' worlds and ways in which we can make that better for them. If you love horses and are willing to do right by them, you're going to love this podcast. And I thank you for being here. One of the biggest issues I come up against time and time again with my clients and also in people for whom I have no business interacting with, meaning people who have friended me on Facebook, people who I follow, I see this consistent issue coming up again and again. By the way, I will mention that anyone can add me on Facebook if you meet a few prerequisites. If you're a horse person, anyone can add me. And at almost 5,000 people there, if I scroll for a few minutes on Facebook, I'm able to take the temperature of the community that's interested in what I do and who I am. And one of the things that I've committed to doing is minding my own business. So unless someone comes to me and asks me for assistance, I don't go outside of myself to offer it unsolicited because I respect someone else's situation. I respect that there may be variables that they haven't alluded to. They may have support that they require, and or they might not be ready to receive the support they require. So I make myself open and as available as I can, but I also believe in minding my own business and respecting other people's process and their journeys. But this is one of the biggest issues I come across, and it's people's, in my opinion, slightly crappy relationship with physical exercise. So a lot of people have horses who have stopped moving. I actually wrote a post about this not so long ago, and it seemed to resonate with a lot of folks, and that's what's inspired this conversation here, or this chat with you here, is about horses who have stopped moving. There are many different reasons why a horse can stop moving or fall out of love with movement or not be moving easily. And I think it's really important that we figure out what this means, how to navigate it, and what to do about it. As it stands, mainstream horse training is predominantly focused on physical outcomes of the horse. So making the horse move and doing things with them in movement. And for good reason, because if you've got a horse for whom that is appropriate, working with them in movement, trot, canter, lateral work, all the things, all the dancing, feels sublime to both the human and the horse. When it's done right, it can feel so sublime. I have a background of movement. I was a dancer, and my whole life has been about movement. And then with horses, I have experienced what it feels like to be in the saddle for 6 to 8 hours a day on a horse that was happy to be there. I know what that feels like. And so, as someone who sees the value in movement, I also see the problems associated with people who develop this weird relationship to it. Something that I hear a lot is someone forcing a horse to move and then saying, well, it's for their own good. And I say, really? Does the horse feel that? They say, no, the horse has a problem. Insert problem here. The problem could be physical. It could be osteopathic, it could be digestive, respiratory, mental, emotional, but the horse has a problem and the horse is not moving enough and movement is a solution for the problem. Meanwhile, usually the lifestyle goes unaddressed, the horse keeping strategies go unaddressed, the diet goes unaddressed, and yet someone will often take a great big lash to that horse's backside and make them move. Will lunge and sweat, and then they'll pat themselves on the back, metaphorically speaking, for saying, well, you know, I'm making you move, and it's kind of horrible for you, horse, but it's for your own good. And see, don't you feel better now that I forced you to do it? Don't you feel good? Yeah, I mean, anyone can flood a body with enough endorphins and adrenaline that they feel a high, but that's very, very different from well-being. well-being has a totally different feeling tone to an adrenaline high or an endorphin high. Endorphins and adrenaline and neuroendocrine profile is part of it. But well-being in highly activated movement is a strangely elusive thing and something that requires a lot of finesse and a lot of work towards. I put it to us, deeply caring horse people, that it is our responsibility to ensure that before we take a lunging whip to our horses, before we make the horses sweat for their own good, that it is our responsibility to make sure that the horse's lifestyle and environment meets all of their basic needs. Imagine a horse who has a diet and lifestyle arrangement that maintains all of their physical baseline health, mental, physical, and spiritual requirements, that their body weight is maintained, their joint health is maintained, a modicum of natural low-level cardiovascular health is maintained, their mental soundness is maintained, their emotional social soundness is maintained through lifestyle, diet, and management, through horse husbandry, horse keeping. Those things are here that if you set them up correctly, the horse doesn't have to trot and canter for hours every week just to stay alive anymore. Now, I understand that that's going to be a hot button topic for a lot of us in a very activated conversation, because not all of us are so lucky to have control over our horses' lifestyles. And you would be remiss to think that I'm speaking here from a position of horsekeeping elitism. I might have my own property now, but if you had walked the last 5 years in my shoes to the journey to this place for this horse property, I would challenge anyone to have kept up with me and to have been as resilient as I've had to have been in the environments I've been with horses. I've kept horses in, I try not to be disrespectful to the people who gave me places to access horsekeeping, but there was once an environment where I kept my horse. It was a firewood camp, a gypsy firewood camp, less than 1 acre in size, on the side of a very, very steep 45-degree angled hill. So less than 1 acre, 45-degree slope, narrow terraces less than 3 meters wide, and there were 3 horses living on this, sharing it with a firewood operation run by the local gypsies. And so all day there was chainsaws going and trucks coming and going. A place to train and work, forget about it. There wasn't anything wide enough or flat enough or big enough to train them. The only thing I could do was go on hacks. And the only access to hacking I had, again, was on narrow, precipitous goat tracks going up and down hills. But this was just after I've had to flee a country because I wasn't politically or socially safe in that country anymore. I had to flee that country where I had a horsekeeping setup which was appropriate for us. So I've had good times, I've had bad times. I've had times where I had nowhere else to go except the backyard of a friend. And I was keeping them behind a temporary fencing in a small garden in a backyard because I had nowhere else to go. I've had so little money in my account sometimes and so little opportunity to have access to space, land, and horsekeeping that I've been very, very close to the edge more times than I care to admit. So when I speak about horsekeeping, I speak about it from someone who has had to suffer quite a lot to find good horsekeeping for my horses. And in fact, all aspects of my business right now are primarily focused on creating good horsekeeping for my horses that maintains their physical, mental, social health without me having to intervene so much. So that when I train them, I'm training an animal who's already at a baseline of well-being and health. And so the training is there to help the cup overflow with well-being, not to just keep the cup full enough that the horse can keep ticking along. And I think a lot of training goes really, really wrong when we use human intervention as the guise and principle of, I'm doing this for your health and well-being, ... in parentheses, brackets, oh, but I'm also getting what I want when I do this. But we tell a story about it for the horse's well-being, and yet we're also getting something out of it at the same time. It's something like exploitation, you know, and it can go really, really far. You'd be amazed at how far up that line of thought people will go. I've seen horses strapped down with side reins or draw reins, with flash nose bands on leverage bits, with their nose on their chest, and someone looks me dead in the eye and says, I'm doing this to lift them off their forehand for their own well-being. Do we understand that that comes from the same place? You and I can hear the red flags. You and I can hear how inappropriate that logic is. And yet, why are we not finding this logic more commonplace? I think it's really dangerous if we start to sell forced movement as an act of well-being. If someone came into my house and forced me to go run marathons and told me it's so that you can be fitter and healthier, that doesn't mean I've consented to it. And by the way, I think we've misunderstood how much physical or cardiovascular fitness and muscle strength a horse actually needs to be with well-being and health. They don't have to be super athletes with fully rounded muscles like a mega athlete in order to have a baseline of health. Horses can be turned out to pasture and have access to movement all day and can have a baseline of health. And by the way, if they're turned out enough, you don't have to work so hard to bring them back into fitness. When you do bring them back into fitness, they maintain a lot better. Their joints are healthier. They're sounder. I don't understand why this isn't common practice anymore. And I know I'm going to piss off a lot of people with this episode. You know, and I have a very, very close friend of mine who pays attention to my business, but she's not a horse person. I was out to dinner with her last year and, you know, she was talking about my work and that she's proud of me. And she says, you know, I watch everything you post, Lockie, and you keep saying that what you're talking about is controversial. And yet from the outside looking in, as a non-horse person, everything you say just sounds really logical to me. She's like, what is going on with horse people? Where did they sell their logic to? Who did they sell it to? Where did it go? And I just shake my head. I don't understand it either. Now, I'm going to be really clear. I'm not talking about every horse person in the world. So if the shoe doesn't fit, don't wear it. But if the shoe fits... So I wrote about this in my Facebook page, and I'm just going to read to you some of the excerpts here. Okay, so your horse has stopped moving. Maybe your horse had a troubled past and you've been rehabilitating their sense of safety with you. Or perhaps that horse had a really good start and they've never been afraid of people, but you are exploring relaxation after many years of hyperadrenalizing, stressful, and dopamine-fueled interactions with horses. And you're wondering if it is even possible to be quiet and easy with horses at all. And now your horse won't move. You ask them to go, they don't go. This, my friends, is where the rubber meets the road. This is where your horsemanship really finds its stride. This is also a fork in the path that divides horse people. So we need to be aware of how many horses actually motivate movement through a fear of not moving instilled in them by human beings. A fear of punishment if they don't move their feet. Often these horses have been rushed, intimidated, frightened, and manipulated into movement. We have confined them until they are fit to burst from their skin and they have nothing but movement to express because the only place they can move is in training. So what about the horse who lives turned out? How do they value movement? How can a horse value movement differently? When movement is no longer a precious resource we gatekeep as training, but something that they access all year. And what about the horse who now knows that with you, they are safe to stand still and they won't be punished? Who knows that you won't force them and now asks, why? Why should I? Is our answer better than, because I said so? How many of us were raised with that principle? Because I said so. Mom, Dad, why is it XYZ? Because I said so. Why should I? Because I said so. Are we putting this onto our horses? I mean, even with our human prefrontal cortex, where we can abstractly understand, well, the adult is an authority figure and we need to adhere to that. Even with our human understanding and language, it's difficult for most people to understand because I said so. What chances have horses got? If we speak about anthropomorphism, I can't understand anything more anthropomorphic than because I said so or because it's good for you. Well, does the horse agree with that? What if we had another option? What if the other option was, horse, let's move together because it feels great to move together. Now, that sounds really idealistic, and it's not going to be immediately felt by many horses, because many horses don't have a track record of feeling great in movement with people. So how can they take you up on something that they have a track record of feeling shitty in? Well, something about trust, right? So you've got to build that trust. And I circle back to the beginning again, that it starts with relationship. Most horses will reject the offering to move together if they have a history of moving with people that felt kind of crappy. And then once they start moving, once they give you a try, once they try to move with you, once they say, okay, I will try moving for you, because I wouldn't do it for someone else, but I'll try it for you. When they start moving, their saddle shouldn't hurt. Their feet shouldn't hurt. Their body should be ready for what you ask. Their bodies should be balanced. Our bodies should be balanced. Our seat should be harmonious. And more importantly, our activities with them should be fair and interesting and fun. And here comes the exceedingly long horsemanship checklist that we have to make sure is in place so that movement is something the horse values. Now, if you start looking at this checklist, many people start to roll their eyes and sigh and say, oh, that's a lot. It's like, well, yeah, horsemanship is a lot. And just because we're overwhelmed by it does not constitute a permission slip for us to shortcut it with a kick. Because many of us do just go straight to a shortcut and it's just a kick. Just make it happen. Ah, forget the checklist. Just make it happen. Go on with it, right? So this is when we see the truth. So many horses stop moving with us for so many reasons. And I'm just going to go ahead and list some of the reasons that I've discovered in my work and my research so far for why horses stop moving. Firstly, movement in the past for that horse was motivated by fear and intimidation. So if you remove the fear and intimidation, you also remove the motivation and reason and context for them to move. You see, if movement was connected to fear and intimidation, when you remove the fear and intimidation, you also remove the movement. And now the horse is essentially untrained in how to move with us, because they never learned a better reason to move beyond being forced somehow by us. Number two, the horse might not be ready. They are tired. Years, sometimes decades, of locking into multiple human nervous systems that signaled to the horse, give me more, and then give me even more. Greedy, greedy, never enough action addicts who never let the horse rest. Now they find themselves with you, and now they are safe. The action addict is gone. And now the horse says, if you're actually asking me what I need, I need rest. These horses have been running on fumes for years or decades even. They are spent. They might even have very little to offer us now because what they had has been used up. I am of the opinion that horses' energy and our energies are finite resources. If you use them up too early, you'll be spent too early. So it behooves us, pun intended, to redefine a horse's horsemanship in ways where their nervous system can find new parameters for generosity. A gentle walk around the block might be sufficient for such a horse now. Adequate turnout, which in my opinion should be full-time turnout, might be enough for them now. Are we brave enough to release our ambition from such horses, these horses who've been chewed up and spat out, and release our belief that we know better and can and should fix them? Some horses are just done with all of that. And these horses are not done with us entirely because they've moved on to higher lessons for humanity. And sometimes those lessons are something about our entitlement, something about our desire to fix everything so that we can get what we want. Maybe horses are here to lead us to a few lessons about that. Okay, number three, these horses might have an undeveloped concentration profile. It's that whole getting distracted by a squirrel concept, right? These horses have the attention span of a goldfish. They have not developed the long-form thought patterns needed to develop movement that matters to them. In horsemanship, we have hard skills and soft skills. Hard skills would be the nuts and bolts of your physical skill set. How fit you are, your physical timing, quality of your gestures, your balance, how you use your aids, etc. That's your mechanical hard skill set. And your soft skill set is your mental and emotional skill set. And before we can ask for hard skills like regular exercise or a physical, mechanical, biomechanical training program, horses need the soft skills which formulate the foundation that can build that exercise program. You know how many people bypass the soft skills and go straight to a biomechanical program before they've built anything in a soft skill sense with a horse at all? This is inappropriate in my opinion. It puts the cart before the horse. And a lot of people tell a storyline that through a correct biomechanical training program, we can change the horse's soft skills. Yes, we can. There's a Venn diagram overlap, but call that mechanical training. Don't call that a focus on soft skill set training. Don't say that you prioritize a horse's emotional health and then exclusively train them biomechanically. Because if you're exclusively training them biomechanically, your actions speak louder than your words. And your actions say that when push comes to shove, I adhere to the priority of a horse's physical actions for me before I prioritize emotional skill set. Or these trainers don't have tools, effective tools for soft skill sets with a horse. So they can only access a horse's soft skill development through a hard skill development program. That's the only tool they've got to do it. So if anyone listening thinks they might be one of those instructors that feels like they might lack skills to develop a horse's soft skill set so that we can train them biomechanically, please reach out to me. Let me hold your hand. I've got some tools for this. I want to help you with this. Because no horse can discover a movement that feels good if they cannot concentrate long enough on a single movement to feel the endorphins associated with it. It's a catch-22 so many horse people trip on. Because we have undeveloped or misappropriated observational skills that prioritize a horse's short form answers and forgets that horses are naturally long form thinkers and feelers. Constant interruption from new aids or dopamine triggers, in my opinion, is unhelpful here. Developing long duration behaviors and feeling tones so that the horse can discover that movement can feel good when you find your stride and feel the flow of it. We've got to help our horses have longer form concentration spans, especially in some corners of the world where trail riding or ranching is a long forgotten tradition. Because trail riding and ranching are two skills, two activities which naturally develop a horse's long form concentration span. Okay, number four. Another reason a horse can't move or has stopped moving is because they can't. Their body won't let them. There is, in my opinion, and this is where I'm about to get hate mail, in my opinion, there is no competitive test in any discipline beyond maybe showing morphology in hand that is appropriate for a horse under the age of six. This is my opinion. My opinion is based on my understanding of the mental, emotional, and physical development of a horse relative to their age. We need to stop competing horses under these ages because after the age of 10, they start to have problems. And I'm going to welcome the hate mail and the unfollows I get for saying that. All right, moving on. More on the fact that they can't and their body won't let them. Many horses now, because of decades of dangerous breeding and inbreeding experiments, have bodies that are broken from birth. Often, their bodies that are broken are then exacerbated in damage after heavy strain because they're put under strain before their broken bodies were at least properly developed. So the body was broken, bones malformed, soft tissues missing, attachment points on crucial ligaments and tendons missing in some of these line-bred horses. And yet we don't even give them a chance to fully develop the limited body that they have, and we're already putting them under huge strain. These horses have issues. And it's, in my opinion, a slow-moving natural disaster in the performance horse world as we speak, and so many people have their heads in the sand about it. And the horses, meanwhile, are begging for a reprieve, for improved diagnostics, for slower and more careful development, broad spectrum across the board. And thankfully, we are seeing a rise of professionals who are walking this talk appropriately. I've had a bunch of them on the podcast, and I will continue to have them here on the podcast. We need to stop demanding certain types of physical performance from horses who physically cannot perform those things. Because it turns out asking a horse to move with us brings up a lot of our human imperfections. I am a wildly imperfect person. I think you can hear this in the way I speak, that I have strong fixations and strong opinions about certain things, which is a sign of imperfection. The fact that I have very strong opinions about certain things, opinions which can offend others, that's an imperfection. So I speak about human imperfections as someone who is also imperfect, and that's why I can speak about them. Because if we are impatient when we ask a horse to move and they don't, guess what will come to the surface? Our impatience. If we are entitled and we ask a horse to move and they don't, we will behave in an entitled manner. If we are confused when we ask a horse to move and they don't, we will act confused. If we are unfocused and we ask a horse to move and they don't, we will be unfocused. It brings up a lot of truth for the humans and for the horses. If the horse is tired, exercise will exhaust them. If they have been scared, exercise will make them more afraid. If they have been forced, these horses will be enraged by exercise. If they are in pain, these horses will resist exercise and beg for support. So it is my opinion that before we celebrate physical training as the be-all and end-all in our horsemanship, let us believe our bodies and our horses when they collectively and congruently inform us that physical exercise is more than a tool we are entitled to. But physical exercise and physical training, biomechanical training, can instead be a necessary call to action to drastically improve the quality of our relationships with our horses and with ourselves. You've been listening to the Emotional Horsemanship Podcast. I'm your host, Lockie Phillips, and that was a solo episode number 2, a blog or essay style post, shorter in length but jam-packed in information. If you'd like to learn more about emotional horsemanship, please visit emotionalhorsemanship.com. I thank you for listening, and I hope to see you here next time. Take care of yourselves.